Hello, welcome to Strange Love of Movies. My name is Olivia Martinez, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Oscar and Emily Martinez. And today we're on episode 16 of our Coen Brothers series with a film that is very different than its predecessor. Inside Llewyn Davis is what we're talking about this week. Last week was True Grit, which is a Western, a very commercial film. This is not a Western. What is this? Like a biography?
Sort of a fake biography.
A Bob Dylan type, but a very unsuccessful one. And it's very, very different than really any of their other films. But it really shows their love for music, I think.
Yeah, it really centers around the folk music scene in Greenwich Village, especially in New York City in early 60s.
Yeah, the same era where Dylan's associated.
Right, and it's Llewyn Davis is played by Oscar Isaac, and he's a singer-songwriter, and it starts off, it's very important how it starts off, because he's in this really nice apartment, and you're thinking, come on, he can't afford that. And sure enough, he can't. he's couch surfing. And I thought that was a great depiction of these professors, right? They're professor friends that they like him, but they kind of see him almost like a puppet. Yeah, like an ethnographer.
Or a little mascot.
Like
or
an
something.
Ethnographer would, like they're studying this Greenwich Village singer, songwriter, whatever he is.
And I think they respect him, but as much as anything, they respect the fact that he's living this kind of sort of untethered life, while they're much more responsible. But like, they seem to like his music. I mean, I think he's talented.
And if you heard some weird, like, throwing up sound just now, that was our dog, Mr. Spartacus Rex.
Yeah, that wasn't me. That was, blame it on the dog.
But maybe you didn't hear that. I hope you didn't. But before we get into the professors and all of that, we need to talk about Llewyn Davis. Yes, he is played by Oscar Isaac. And this is really Oscar Isaac's first big role, the role that kind of brought him fame and acclaim. And oh my gosh, the Coen brothers got lucky with him because he is just a star. He is amazing in this film. You kind of are very intrigued and want to like him, but he's just such a screw up. And the film does a really good job of not showing you really many of his screw ups, but just showing how it affects other people. There is a extremely, and in my opinion, over the top performance by Carey Mulligan. And she is just so furious. She hates him.
She hates
Llewyn Davis so much. She just always says she's always cussing at him and saying you've ruined everyone's lives and all that. But we don't see what he exactly did to ruin everyone's lives besides knowing that they had an affair or whatever. But I think he says something like literally like it takes two to tango or something. And she's just so furious.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's not a nice guy, but he's not a mean guy either. He's kind of just there. You know, remember the man who wasn't there.
I feel like it's kind of similar vibes.
In a way, he's kind of sleepwalking through life too, even though he is a...
But he does have passions, at least in this.
Yeah, he's a folk singer, and he's doing his best. And he's pretty good because he actually sings his own... I mean, the actor is amazing because he sings his own songs, plays the guitar. Really well done. And the camera lingers and stays on, if not for the entire song, for most of it. Usually you just see these snippets of people performing, but I thought that was really well done throughout the film.
I know, really, they appreciate the music. I mean, the music is good.
And
he's thought of as talented. I mean, you are impressed by his abilities. It's certainly not a mockumentary or anything like that. I mean, he's supposed to be at least kind of at a level that you take seriously. But the thing is, yeah, he is not a bad guy. He's a real, in a lot of ways, he's kind of a charming guy. In the same way artists, I think, appeal to women and other men. And I mean, he's charming, but he's totally and completely self-centered.
Yes.
I mean, really what it's not what he does to people to hurt them. It's what he doesn't do for anybody else.
That's actually a really good point.
That hurts them. Yeah.
And there are so many people who in his life who do give him these opportunities, not huge ones, but opportunities like Justin Timberlake, who's randomly in this movie. He's married to Carey Mulligan and they seem to be kind of what would you say their act is like in real life?
Kingston Trio?
No, there were several groups. Of course, I can't think of any right now that were just a man and a woman in the day. But they had allusions to people like the Kingston Trio, the Clancy Brothers, all these kind of acts.
More commercial.
Yeah.
Right.
So, commercially successful.
So these two, they're a lot more successful than Llewyn Davis. But Justin Timberlake, at least, is really, really nice to him. He lets him stay on his couch whenever he needs. He gets him this gig to help him record this song about outer space, which is when we're introduced to Adam Driver in this film, who also ends up being really nice to Oscar Isaac for a few minutes there. And then, yeah, those professors who, even though they kind of treat Oscar Isaac as this weird little prop in their life, they treat him really well. Yes. So yeah, there are all these people who are really nice to him, and yet he just is kind of ungrateful and doesn't really do anything with that.
Well, when we were watching it, you said, "Is that Adam Driver?" I felt like you were in that Jackie Brown. Is that Rutger Hauer?
Oh my gosh. And the funny thing is, Adam Driver, he's not even listed on the DVD, and they have a bunch of names on there. He was just a no-name at this point.
But it shows he's a talented guy because he really stands out. That character really stands out.
And somebody actually mentioned, it's so funny because the song that Justin Timberlake, Adam Driver, and Oscar Isaac are singing has stuff to do with outer space. And the fact that Oscar Isaac and Adam Driver, not just 5 years later, were in Star Wars, the biggest franchise in the world, together, is just a really funny, weird, illusion.
That is random. Shall we talk about the cat?
And the cat plays a very important, I think, a central role in this, not just because it's featured throughout the movie, but I think that's definitely a
symbol.
Yes. Right.
Well, the very first scene is a big, you wake up and there's a cat on your chest. When he's sleeping, there's a cat on top of him. And the cat figures in prominently throughout the film. He comes in and...
Basically, the cat escapes and he feels responsible to find this cat and bring it back to these people who loaned him their
apartment.
And it's
the professor's cat.
The professor's cat. And he has just this cross-country trip with this cat and da-da-da.
Yeah, ultimately, it's an odyssey, right? They're big with that. Little brother, where art thou? And speaking of that film, the Coen brothers said that this was a direct descendant of that musically.
Yeah,
that
makes
sense. That was set in the 30s. This is only 30 years later.
Oh, you're right.
And so that makes a lot of sense. There were some elements of those. You could see the folk music coming out of that traditional music, where it came from.
People's music, yes.
That is such an interesting point. But the kitty, also one of the best things about it is that it looks just like our cat, Pumpkin.
Yeah.
And yeah, this cat he doesn't know the name of the cat for the entire film. And I'm not going to give away what the name of the cat ends up being at the end. But I feel like that's almost too obvious what it's named. But I think it's just kind of a wink, you know?
Yes, I think so too.
Because the Coens, they're goofy guys. Even though this film isn't that goofy, there are funny moments and funny elements to it. But one of the strangest parts, which, Dad, you always say how there's always a fantasy sequence in their films, but this doesn't have a fantasy sequence. But some people view the scene with John Goodman as a fantasy sequence. That whole car ride and that weirdness.
Oh, really?
Which I don't think that's the case.
I don't think so.
But that is a weird scene.
See, we'd only seen it once before, Mom and I had. And if you had asked me, I would have said that was the fantasy sequence because he certainly did not exist. But looking at it again, it was just weird. It kind of showed the darker side of that time where people had issues, drug issues, serious drug issues. And maybe the Garrett Hedlund, I don't even know who that is, but he played this beat poet, Kerouac-like. And again, they're going across country, and you think Oscar Isaac is going across country for a specific reason, to see a specific person. Nope, he's trying to audition for a gig at this place in Chicago.
Yeah, you think he's trying to do the right thing for this former girlfriend, but no, he's looking after his own career again.
Just doing his own thing again, you know. But again, the music is just really, really good. It's of that time, and I think that's a big part of the plot as well, that times are always changing, not to quote anyone, but that even what he was doing, it's kind of been done before. He was fine. He was serviceable, perfectly fine, but the times were changing, but you could tell he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't personally growing as a person or as a songwriter or as a singer.
And also, going back to the cat, that was the one time when he was trying to return the cat and trying to find the cat. That was the one time in the movie that he really tries to take responsibility and do the right thing.
Yeah.
And even that, I don't want to give it away too much, but basically even that doesn't end up well for him. So it's sort of like when he finally decides to kind of grow up and take responsibility, it's almost too late.
Oh, no, I was going to say another character actor, F. Murray Abraham, the guy who killed Mozart, he's in this, and you know, when you think about it, when he offers, he just tells them how many movies throughout their filmography where somebody actually speaks the truth. He's like, yeah, you're fine, but you're not a lead.
I think he also said, I don't see any money in this.
Yeah, but he says, would you like to join this group? And if you think about it, he had a man and a woman, and he would have been the third person, two guys and a woman. Peter, Paul, and Mary, right? Yeah. So he could have been one of those. You get the sense of he's had opportunity, as y'all mentioned earlier, opportunity after opportunity, but he just doesn't see it.
And there had been, it kind of starts with some references to his former partner who had ended tragically.
Oh, right.
And so there is kind of a dark cloud hanging over his life, probably from what had happened to his former partner. I mean, partner in song, not romantic partner.
Yeah, and they made this for $11 million. How is that possible? And they made $33 million. That's teeny tiny, right? Budget?
Yeah, that is.
Also, we've referred to the beginning, to the first scene as being him in the apartment, but actually the first scene is him getting beaten up.
Yeah, we should talk about
that. In an alley. And that's also the last scene.
Yes.
And so in a way, I almost wonder, that at first seems kind of like a fantasy sequence, or at least the figure is not
shadowy,
identifiable.
Shadowy, yes, in the shadows, you never see his face.
But yeah. I think it's something that really happened. But
yeah, maybe spoilers ahead, but not, I mean, this whole movie, really, if you spoiled the whole thing, you can still watch it like totally fine, because there isn't like these huge plot points. But yeah, so the very first scene is Oscar Isaac singing this beautiful song. I mean, he just sounds so good. He's so talented. And we actually watched Inside Llewyn Davis, which was the like mini making of documentary that was featured on the DVD, because Strange Love World fashion, we watched DVDs. And they said how they recorded it live, which is just so remarkable because it sounded so good. But you see Oscar Isaac singing, he says a really good job. Then you see him talking to the owner of the bar, and then he says, hey, you have a friend waiting outside for you. And then, yeah, he gets beaten up, and then it just kind of starts.
You never know who that person was until the end. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you see the cat on him in that really nice apartment, and then there's that. But what I think it is that the Coen brothers, I wonder if they just didn't know how to start the film. No, they know everything they're doing always. But I think they just put that there kind of, I don't know, to leave an element of confusion. It
Maybe.
May not be as smart as, I don't know.
I know, I'm
sure
genuinely
exactly confused
either.
By that.
I mean, I think the meaning of the scene was basically finally somebody, and it took this guy to really give him what he deserved.
Yeah.
You know, to really kind of take some revenge on him. But I don't know exactly why they had that scene. Yeah, the exact same scene at the beginning.
I know, the timeline of it. I'm like trying to work it through it like a Christopher Nolan film, but I think it really doesn't matter that much. And I think what it is that it was just the night after he gets back to New York from that whole journey to the Midwest and all of that. And then it's just the night after. And then for some reason that night they put in the first scene too. I don't know.
And the executive music producer on this was T-Bone Burnett, the legendary T-Bone Burnett. And he worked with them on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
And The Big Lebowski. And both are known for really good music.
Oh,
you know,
that's
the,
right.
The soundtracks and the score. But yeah, they make live music is certainly better. And that's you can tell that they're really enjoying it. And they really are singing. And it was very entertaining. I was surprised how entertaining that part of it was.
It was original music, right?
Yeah. For the most part, yes.
And yet it really fit the time perfectly. And yeah, it was really high quality.
But I think another thing, though, is that, yeah, it fit the time perfectly, but they were intentional in making it not just, it wasn't as good as Bob Dylan, you know?
True.
It's just not as good. Or as, yeah, I mean, and I think that's very on purpose, because I'm sure there were so many Greenwich Village artists like that who were very talented, but they didn't have that.
Yes, that's
that
a good
Dylan
point.
Had. And should we talk about, spoiler alert, Bob Dylan?
Well, we can talk about it in a oblique way. As we mentioned earlier, he's kind of stuck in his ways. He's not going to change. And let's just say in the course of the movie, toward the end, something's going to happen that he's either going to have to change, or he's going to realize he's in the wrong profession, in the wrong league, because somebody shows up on the scene who you might have heard of him. He might make an appearance later, and I don't know where I'm going with this. How do we not spoil it?
No, you don't spoil it. I said spoiler alert.
Well, at the end, it features as Llewyn Davis is leaving stage, he's followed by another artist who you could just kind of see in silhouette, right?
Yeah, profile.
But you kind of get the idea he might be, he's the real future because he really has a Dylan look about him.
There you go.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I don't know. I thought this was a really well-made film, but it was not my favorite of theirs at all.
No. I think it, in a way, I think it was, he was one of the least, maybe, I mean, it, considering that he wasn't a villain or whatever, he was probably the least likable protagonist.
Yeah, I didn't really root for him at all.
No. I mean, he was a charming guy, but he really didn't earn your respect or affection.
Yeah, if you think about it, he doesn't smile at all. It's sort of like the man who wasn't there. There's not a single scene where he's enjoying anything. It seems like he's always, people are out to get him, and he's kind of...
And he did it all to himself.
Yeah, and he has exactly. That sadness, too. And who knows what he said to drive his partner away, and he didn't want to be seen as... He wasn't in that duo anymore, and yet that's how people viewed him. That's where his success came from, if he had any success, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree. I think he was not meant to be sympathetic, and he certainly wasn't.
Yeah, because that said, I mean, Oscar Isaac did a great job. I mean, who is that actor? He was just so unlikable. It wasn't like that. I mean, he did a great job portraying that character.
Right, and this is from 2013, so we're getting close to the end of this, as you mentioned at the beginning, Liv.
I know.
So this has been exciting. I can't believe we've gone from so many places in this during this series, but here we are. We're up to New York City. And not that they make all their movies in chronological order, but you know what I mean? Like, they're in the 1960s, and that's kind of interesting. That's an interesting period of time.
True. Should we get to ratings?
Yes. How many winter coats would you give this?
Oh, that's dark.
Winter coats.
Okay.
Yes.
I think I would give this probably maybe 3.75. Because I think that, I mean, it was just like directed perfectly. It was a very well-made film. Technically, I love the music. I love the performance of Oscar Isaac. But I just thought, I don't know. I didn't connect to it like I thought I was going to.
And I'd probably give it a 3.
Okay.
I didn't love it. But it was well-made. And it was certainly, seems like so many others in the series, I did like it better this time than when we saw it at the theater.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, probably a 3.
I think a 3.5 for me. I think there are several scenes that stick with you, but some of those sequences, especially the John Goodman stuff, I didn't quite get, and it seemed a little tedious, which is hard.
I agree.
Yeah, it's crazy to say that about a Coen Brothers film, but that's the only time I've ever felt that in any of the movies we've seen that. Yeah, let's just fast forward this part because I kind of wanted
it to wrap up.
Yeah, it wasn't that clear. But then I will say the one scene that may redeem it was when he's having dinner at the professor's
house.
And they break out the guitar. Hey, could you do a song for us? And he's like, yeah, you can tell he doesn't want to, but he does. And then he goes, flies off the handle, but he's literally singing for his supper because he says, well, I don't go to your place and ask you, or I don't ask you to give me a lecture on Mesoamerica.
Yeah,
you
know? Like a trained monkey.
And it's interesting. So he thought he was born to be the singer. But he resented the fact that he was only viewed as a singer, and yet that's what he was good at, you know. And it was
good character study.
Yeah, it was interesting character.
And that was probably also there were a lot of maybe musicians, but also probably more in the other arts. I would think like in visual arts and stuff, mm-hmm. how the patrons. I mean, sort of like the artist is beholden to the patrons, but there's also a resentment.
Oh yeah,
bite the hand kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting, though, how many people swear by this movie. I know quite a few who would say it's their top 10 in their top 10 list, which is so interesting. So I'll have to give it another try at some point. But for now, I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to watch that. It was depressing.
I will say there's no other movie like it where they devote so much time to the music, actually song per song per song.
It really did remind me a lot of the Dylan documentary, Don't Look Back. I mean, that definitely was kind of the... I guess it wasn't so much the model for it because it wasn't like a crew was following this famous guy, but I don't know. It just had similar vibe.
And we didn't even talk about, I know this is getting long, but who was the artist that it was actually?
Oh, yes. A gentleman named Dave Von Ronk. And yes. he used to run around with Dylan. And in fact, I think his version of House of the Rising Sun, Dylan stole and put on his first album.
And there's an album called Inside Dave Von Ronk. And the cover is the exact same as the Inside Llewyn Davis cover. So, I mean, it's a clear homage.
Yes, as is a cover of Free Will and Dylan, which we also saw in Vanilla Sky, which we've talked about before,
right.
Where he's walking down the street and there's snow around him. It's just so iconic. That's your word, Liv.
I know it is. I've tried to stop. And what is the Coen Brothers' obsession with orange kitties? You know, I mean, remember
we love orange kitties, true. But apparently they do too.
Yeah, because we talked about the Lady Killers, I mean, I guess weeks ago at this point, but they have an orange cat in that featured prominently. And in this one too, they must have one or something.
Yeah, either that or they realized from the Lady Killers that the only good thing about that movie was the acting of the orange cat in that.
Pickles.
I guess an orange tabby.
That's
Pickles.
Right.
So they, maybe this was Pickles's offspring.
Maybe so. But on that note, follow us on Instagram at strangeloveofmedia. Visit our website, strangeloveofmovies.com. Thank you for listening to episode 16 of our Coen Brothers series. Like Dad said, we are almost there. We have two films to go. Next week will be a much lighter film. It is Hail Caesar, and we will see you then. Bye, guys.